welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Right now, I'm actually interviewing Dan Gold again because we decided we were going to expand upon what we actually spoke about earlier on today. In the times that we're going through right now, getting your message across is very, very difficult in this time of crisis, yeah? And Dan is an international communications expert, Dan Gold, and he doesn't like being called an expert, but, you know, it is what it is. He is. So... sorry, Dan, but we're going to talk about three things: how to engage with the media to get your message across, how to encourage thought leaders to share and engage with your content, and how to engage with company insiders to share your messages. So how to engage with the media to get your message across is a very difficult one in this time of crisis, right? And we were talking about this earlier, and is it a case of actually just waiting until this crisis is over before you try and get your message across and trying to help people in the meantime, or what?
Well, the truth is that it's going to come down to a taste test. And if by pushing a message, it is not sympathetic or it seems vulgar, there's a vulgarity test. If it's vulgar to you, it'll be vulgar to other people. Or if it's a message that is insensitive whilst people are dying around the world, Then it's a case of adjusting the tone of the message. I would say to organizations, what are the operational priorities of the firm? Because I can tell you one thing: trying to put out positive news stories during a major crisis is challenging, because it can be frowned upon from the point of view of, okay, you're pumping out all this positive news. Are you trying to hide something? Is there something you don't want to talk about because you're pumping out so much positive material? If it is truly sincere and authentic, that you care and you're trying to do things for the community, that you're going out there and you are funding, care packages for the elderly, checking in on the elderly from a safe distance, etc., people who live alone, that's a good news story, and it's newsworthy. If there's one thing that's going to come out of a crisis, and this is a general crisis rather than a focus to an individual organization crisis, if there's one thing that's going to come out of this, is if your organization is affected by having people go down with COVID-19, or God forbid anyone dies from it from your organization, these are newsworthy stories, and the news media will cover those automatically. There will be no covering it up. There will be no hiding it. There will be questions actually of accountability, and the accountability will be, well, what precautions did you put in? What steps did you put in place to ensure that people weren't unnecessarily exposed? Did you cancel face-to-face meetings in time? Did you force people, I don't know, whilst they were traveling to share a hired car? One person had COVID-19 and they were healthy, and the other person in the car had underlying health issues and they weren't healthy and they passed away. The news media will cover that. Now, looking at it from the other side, that's from a crisis communication point of view. From the other side, if you are still putting out messaging to sell stuff, to sell your products and services, which ultimately keeps people employed, there is nothing essentially wrong with that. The tone of the messaging should be not so aggressive. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you as an organization pull back from all messaging, you pull all your adverts, you stop doing everything, you will then face an uphill battle, and generating awareness becomes a lot more expensive and a lot more difficult. And your responsibility is to your employees, to your stakeholders, mm-hmm. to your existing customers. And if your marketing effort stops, that's problematic. If you're looking at this from the third point of view, it's a case of, well, I want to get – story into the media that we've done all the right things, that we've taken all the right precautions, and we've sent everyone home. Essentially, that's not newsworthy, and the news media won't pick up on that because you're just doing the right thing. So you have to do something that's over and above to get any attention. The priority of the news media at this time is on people whose lives are directly affected, and that's absolutely what they should be doing.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen quite a bit of coverage. I mean, there are a few interesting ones. I mean, the people who are making hand wash, they're converting their factories to making hand sanitizer, right? I thought that's quite newsworthy. There's also a cleaning company in America called Truman's, and they're actually, I think they're actually giving some cleaning products away to people in the US, which I thought was particularly nice, and asking people how they can help them and this kind of stuff. But, you know, in general, I think right now there are a lot of people that don't know what to do because this is the biggest crisis that we've had in a very, very long time, like globally. And I think there are a lot of PR departments, a lot of marketing departments, social media in particular, who are struggling because they don't actually know what to do, right?
I agree with you on that entirely. And I will say this, that if someone at the head of a communications team is truly a senior professional communicator, they will They will start, middle, and end on strategy.
Yeah.
And what we find too often, especially in social media, is unfortunately organizations go, well, we'll get the receptionist to do social media. Mm-hmm. Well, here's my point. A receptionist tactically will be able to put posts out, the fun ones and the business ones and the selling ones. That's fine. But when something goes sideways, that's when you need strategy. And here's my question to all those organizations out there that say, hey, just get the admin person or the receptionist to do it. Here's my question. If you value that person to be the gatekeeper of your brand in the digital space, would you trust that person to deal with your advertising materials? Would you trust that person to deal with pitch documents when you go to sell something? Because when it comes to due diligence and clients checking out who you are, they will be looking at your social channels as well before they put any money into you.
Yeah.
And if it isn't aligned, if there is a disconnection, there's a problem. So that's a side topic. But the important thing I'd say there is if you are using an office junior who may be talented, who may be able to do all sorts of things, don't have them as a part-timer. Invest in them as people and get them further up the line of being professional communicators and marketers because you already see something in them. Make the most of that.
I agree. So in terms of engaging with the media, we're kind of putting that on the back burner then really, unless something's newsworthy and it's positive or it's negative, we're putting that on the back burner, right? Until this sort of blows over and gets better. So what that means is that from where I'm sitting, it's like, well, actually, how are we going to engage with the media to get your message across, but more about in the medium to long term? Is that fair to say?
I'm 50-50 on that. The truth is a lot of stories that go out there that are positive news stories, unless they are really, really good news stories, unless they're really benefiting jobs or the health of people or bringing this issue to be as short as possible in terms of timeline, I would question whether you're going to generate any coverage. I wouldn't say to any organization to stop putting the releases out because it's the job of a journalist to dig into that and go, okay, is there a story? Put the information out, but I wouldn't expect coverage per se. But here's the one thing I want to say to everyone. Don't do any outreach to media or the public, regardless of the channel. Don't do any cynical outreach.
Yeah.
It's not how you intend to put things out and generate some extra revenue. It's how it's perceived.
Yeah.
If you suddenly, as we said in our previous talk, if you suddenly make things sound jokey and mm-hmm. you don't take into account how people feel,
yeah,
then it will bite the organization.
Yeah, yeah. It's very difficult to gauge how people are feeling. I mean, you don't really know what is actually going on. So it's very, very difficult. I mean, I'm going to involve someone who's actually, I think she's actually got coronavirus right now, but she's been doing like PR and stuff for like 30 years with charities. So I think from a sort of crisis management side of things, having experienced people like yourself and like Sandra and others who also have deep industry knowledge, because I mean, we focus on, as a business, we focus on the technology industry. That's our complete focus. So having people that have a deep knowledge of the companies in the technology industry, the PR and charity stuff, and the crisis communications and social media really makes all the difference, I think, you know, with all that experience. I think it takes more than one person, you know, with 20 years, 30 or 50 years even experience in business to really get that message across and help a business to move forwards, you know?
I think you can start from the very beginning just by saying, what does my audience need? And you can almost take the channels out of it.
Yeah.
So yes, we're talking specifically about the media in this case, but who are your audiences? Start from there. You've got your staff, you've got investors, stakeholders, you've got industry associations, potentially regulators. Yeah. You'll also have the general public, consumers, etc. So you've got to understand how, when you say one thing to one audience, how it could be seen by another audience. Well, you haven't said that to me, or you've said that to them 2 weeks ago. Why are you only getting to me now? A big thing for organizations to remember is that as soon as you've said something internally, regardless of non-disclosure agreements, you have to consider that the truth has been told, the story has been told, and there is a potential if I tell my wife, my partner, or you know, a colleague, just in general chit chat at the bar, someone else could hear it. Things do get out. So just have integrity. If you're telling a story internally, make sure it's truthful and say the same story externally. We've seen big international corporations caught when different things are said internally and externally, and then they're held to account.
Yeah.
And media is not particularly friendly when they discover that an organization hasn't told the truth.
Yeah, very, very true. So, I mean, I've got these two other questions here, right? But I think before we get into those, you know, really, we're talking about changing what we're actually communicating. I'm not saying be really, really positive, but certainly to change our content strategy. I mean, right now I'm changing my content strategy for my podcast, A few weeks ago, I was doing more general business topics, okay? So now I've decided that I'm going to focus on the real gold, and actually Dan Gold is here, So it's like, well, actually, you know, how do people work from home? How do people avoid depression when they're stuck indoors? That's another one, right? How do they receive a message, right? And the person sending that message out, they might be really depressed, but we don't know. So I'm gonna find some kind of psychologist to interview in the next week, next few days, get them on board with what we're doing over at the Influencer Marketing Company. But so, would you agree with changing the content strategy and perhaps the blogging and the videos and the podcasts and whatever to help people in this time of crisis?
I'll say this. I think that if your blogging strategy, if your content strategy is fairly innocuous, it's fine to continue with your fairly innocuous content, which might not be gaining the most traction, and you might be doing it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
If you are an organization where your communication strategy is directly connected to the organizational goals, then it's a case of having those discussions to make sure that you are taking into account how you are perceived in the marketplace and how you are perceived by different segments of the audience. I would use this time to reach out and demonstrate that you are listening.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest opportunities that we can take advantage of. I wouldn't necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater. I wouldn't dump what you're doing at the moment. It depends entirely on what you are doing. And I'll just add this. I think that there are enough, and I've seen this everywhere, I think that there are enough official channels putting out official information. And in fact, we should leave them to put out the official information.
Yeah.
We should rightfully share
authenticated
information,
yeah,
but we shouldn't try and reinvent the wheel, because what will happen, let's say that parts of the internet go down and then it's down to very limited channels that can put out that information anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just drive people to those resources now and they'll be able to get that information. Where's the value for you as a C-suite member, as a president of an organization, as a board member, whether it's tech or not? The value is that you have shown people that you are willing to point them in the right direction.
Yeah.
For you as an organization, you should be focused on the communicating to preserve and ensure that you have an organization 2 months down the line, 3 months down the line.
Yeah.
You should be using your strategy to ensure that your balance sheet can survive this. And transparency cannot always be 100%. That's true. Mm-hmm. You can say what you can say. Sometimes you cannot say everything because of commercial agreements. That's true. So what I would say is, what you can say, say. And if you can't say something at that time, then just explain why you can't say something.
Right.
It really does stop people going, well, what's happening? What's going on? What's happening? And if the company is facing challenging times, having round tables, having open discussions as far as is possible are essentials. And what you say about psychology matters. A lot of the best human resource people that I know and the people at IABC are all deeply invested in psychology and the impact of the actions of an organization. So we also have to make sure that we align what we're saying is integrated with what we're doing.
Yeah, very much so. So kind of the two other questions, you know, I've got how to encourage thought leaders to share and engage with your content. I mean, that's quite simple compared to what we're talking about here. Would you agree?
Well, selling in a message, because that's what it is. You are encouraging other people to take your message and disseminate it or get behind it and endorse it effectively.
Yeah.
Selling in a message is the same, whether it's to a thought leader, whether it's to the media.
Yeah.
You want them to take your message and share it or interpret it in a good way, in a favorable way, but in a truthful way. That's the important thing.
Exactly.
And I would say that this all comes down to your existing relationship with that influencer and your existing relationship with that media outlet. If you don't have a good relationship, don't suddenly start trying to do it now.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely not saying that you have to put money towards people to get them to say nice things about you. The whole piece on ambassadors and people advocating for you, there are different categories of these people, and it's important to know the difference between them. And I would highly encourage you. There's a great guy out there. He's based in Holland. He's called Mike Klein. Mm-hmm. He explains the influencer shape fantastically. And I would suggest him as a guest on your podcast, because I don't know if there's many people that know this space as well as him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mike Klein, yeah?
That's right.
Yeah, I think I might have heard of him, actually. I think I have heard of him.
And you can find his information from a company that he works with called Populo.
Okay.
P-O-P-U-L-O.
Okay.
Or it could be P-O-P-P-U-L-O.
Okay, I'll have a look at that. So really, it's down to actually maintaining your relationships, one-to-one, personal relationships, reaching out and asking people how they are and how they're holding up. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, that has absolutely got a place. And remembering that every single member of staff, down to Bob in security and Kelly on reception, they are all human beings, they are all concerned, and they are all, most importantly, representing your organization. I have often said that the receptionist is one of the most powerful people in an organization.
Yeah.
They see everyone coming and going, they know the timings, they know the information going forwards and backwards, and yeah, they know things that other people don't know. So be very respectful of everyone within your organization in the good times and during a crisis, yeah, to make sure that there isn't this issue of, well, they go away and go, well, no one's told me anything, and then suddenly reflects badly on your organization and poor internal communication.
Yeah.
So those are important areas to hook up.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, it comes on to the next question. I mean, how to engage with company insiders to share your messages. I mean, at the end of the day, if you look after your people, then they're going to share positive messages. I mean, that's basically, you know, simple, right?
I agree with you entirely. I even go one step further. I have no expectations, but I have hopes that staff would share positive messages.
Yeah.
The truth of it is, if I treat them well and with respect, and I can demonstrate that I not only listen to them and say that I'm listening to them, but I effect change where possible through the consultation with them, they will have a warmer, better feeling towards my organization and therefore will tell a better story. But don't forget that communication is far more than getting people to say nice things or talk about the things that you've done. That whole piece on communication helps operationally. If people work better with each other, if they communicate better with each other, they will work better with each other. They will then let you know very clearly if operationally there are roadblocks. And then if you address those roadblocks, if you work with them, if you consult with them, even as a really strong leader, they will make the organization stronger. They will feel empowered. Their performance will go up significantly.
Yeah.
And these all count towards a stronger, more profitable organization that cares for the people. I mean, we see it thrown out all the time. Look after your people and your people will look after you. But it has to be meaningful. You have to actually not just say these things, but, you know, have town halls within your organization. If you've got a newsletter, an electronic newsletter internally, why not invite them to contribute to it rather than it being a message constantly from the top? Why not have community messaging from different parts of the organization, letting people know about opportunities, successes, and maybe challenges where they want people to come together to develop solutions?
Yeah.
So that is a cultural piece. Psychology, culture, communication, and looking at the goals of the organization, bringing that all together, that is the biggest ball of strategy you will ever have. And I've worked with some of the biggest corporations and organizations where there's five people, and I've seen some best practice come from those organizations of 5 to 500 people. And I've seen some of the best from, you know, 50,000, 100,000 in multiple territories.
Yeah.
Making sure that your people are happy is more than going, are you all right? It's actually letting them tell you when things aren't all right and doing something about it.
Yeah, completely. It's about feedback, right? And I've actually got, I just did three shortish episodes around feedback with one of my global business experts. And yeah, he spent quite a long time at Sony doing some quite strategic sort of marketing business development work in I think it was Europe, Middle East, Asia, but very interesting how all of this differs around the world. And actually giving feedback, I thought was very interesting, and how they do it in Japan. It's very, mm-hmm. very, very different. You know, I mean, he said that feedback in Japan, they don't even say anything. Like, it could be just one, it could be just a look that they give you, or you know, and actually it's not really as encouraged in Japan, which was quite, I thought that was quite interesting, actually. You know, and it all varies. It's a super interesting, super interesting topic. And, you know, I think we put all the pieces together, we've got some very, very interesting, interesting people to talk to around all of this stuff. Yeah. And
I think you've done an amazing job on this podcast and your previous productions as well in providing solutions and guidance and telling the stories of those successes or differences to look for. And just on that one that you've just said, you've highlighted a perfect example. We've been used to traditionally in a lot of companies, and including tech companies who have been bought up over the last 10 to 30 years, because that is the length of the tech revolution, as you know. We are having to not only look at how does our group of employees feel or think or behave, but how do subsets of those groups at different segments want to have feedback? How does one generation as against another want to be engaged with, and where they see purpose? How does one geographical culture or religious group want to be communicated with over a different style of communicating and engaging with them? And taking account of cultural differences can be an area where you can really bring great success to an organization.
Yeah, massively. And organizational management style as well. If you break it all down like that, Dan, it's very simple. Yeah. But actually, you can't just learn this stuff overnight, right? And that's why I talk to people like you, because it's super, super interesting, really. And, you know,
it's totally agree with you. Totally agree. And just as an example of that, there's no one way to manage. There's no one way to measure performance. There's no one way to profile staff to say you fit into this box, you fit into that box. There are lots of gray areas. It's why some professionals in the HR community agree with doing Myers-Briggs, where others look at it and go, this is complete bunkum. So it's interesting that there is no one way, but it's what is most meaningful for your organization, your people, and your audiences to live that and breathe that ethical professional life.
Yeah, very much so. Well, thanks, Dan. That's been absolutely fantastic, and I'm really, really pleased that you joined me. And I will introduce people to you. You know, if anyone would like to speak to you, we're working on something interesting. So, I think it'll be a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too, and don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.